Greetings and welcome to a very special episode of Soundography. This is one of our special pre-episode episodes where we talk to a backer, a patron, a member of our Patreon community who is helping support the show and also who is forcing us, just putting a one of those little plastic guns with the flag that comes out and says bang, putting one of those up to our heads and saying, here is the band I want you to listen to. We're going to talk about that band in just a second. But first, let me introduce, as always, Hammond Chamberlain with me.
Hello.
And our special guest, our patron backer, Peter. And is it Emig?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, welcome, Peter. Thank you for being here, man. And I got to say, thank you for introducing us to the band, The Deer Hunter.
You're very welcome.
Not the movie. This is far less depressing.
And there's another band that's named after the movie, and that also would have been slightly less fun for Brian.
Yes, this is true. No, you know what, Hammond and I are both, you know, we chat via text message during the week as we're listening to the catalog of the band we're covering. And both of us are saying to ourselves, you know, these guys are really good. I don't know why we've never heard of them before. At least I don't know why I've never heard of them before. Hammond, you said that you'd actually heard of these guys before.
Yeah, I had one of their albums. I went on a spree of a handful of years ago looking at small prog labels, a lot of East Coast like festivals that feature prog music and stuff like that. And I kind of went on this binge of finding these kind of bands. And of those bands that I found, only about two or three of them were worth hanging on to. And this was one of them. These guys were one of those bands.
Sure. Makes sense.
I found them because the guitar player for Coheed and Cambria, gosh, almost 8 years ago, I think it was, he just wrote about him on the fan page and said, you know, if you like us, you will probably like these guys. Mm-hmm. So that was right after they put out Act Three.
Okay, makes sense. I can see how Coheed would be down with these guys.
Well, they've toured a few times now.
Mm-hmm. Together, yeah. Like opening, I'm assuming, does Deer Hunter open for Coheed, or is it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first time I saw them, it was Deer Hunter opened for Porcupine Tree, and then Coheed and Cambria closed it.
See, and that's the thing I noticed. These guys sound like Porcupine Tree, Abigail's Ghost, Genesis, and Spock's Beard got together and pooped out things that look like Deer Hunter.
Wow.
I love that.
You should write for Rolling Stone, man.
I've tried to describe Thank You Scientist to other people. It's like if Yes and Rush and Jethro Tull all decided to do one thing together for an album.
Yeah. No, but these guys have a very strong Porcupine Tree vibe to them, and I picked up on that almost immediately. And I don't know if you're familiar with Abigail's Ghost, but they're very much in the same vein, and I think you'd like them too.
Ooh,
they're very cool.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into that.
So you've kind of already talked about this a little bit, but what made you decide to suggest this band to us? Like, what aside from kind of having an idea that Hammond would like it and being kind of maybe surprised that I did as well, what was the impetus for suggesting these guys to us?
Well, they're just great, and no one has heard of them.
Yeah, all right.
It just makes me very sad.
I can totally see that.
And my other choice, the Mars Volta, would have made you sad, and I didn't want that.
You know, Brian could get behind Mars.
If I haven't played Mars Volta on Coverville at some point, I think I at least own some Mars Volta. Let's see here.
I know they have a couple like 35-minute long songs that I think make you a little bit sad.
Oh, that's surprisingly, I'm looking in my library right now, kind of surprised. I don't have any Mars Volta in there, but I've heard of them. But they are of the they're of the Dream Theater song length variety, huh?
I love the fact now that you said off actually more frequently than I do.
What's that?
The magic phrase.
Oh, Dream Theater. Look at that. People have taken two drinks in succession right there. Excellent. How could, how, what's wrong with that? Well, I like it. I love that, that you guys there, you suggested these guys. They're great. There are, there are definitely some similarities that, that Hammond mentioned earlier. I had noticed maybe a new, I hate the term new punk, but a new rock style, kind of like the 30 Seconds to Mars, you know, the newer style, but with more and better instrumentation, I think is the way I described it to Hammond.
Yeah.
Well, they do have a punk background. Casey's first band was called On the Receiving End of Sirens, and they were a post-hardcore punk band.
Okay. Yeah, so that's where I'm hearing the influence there, for sure. It's not as pop punk as stuff like Blink 182 and even you know, even 30 Seconds to Mars and stuff like that. But it's a very accessible punk, newer punk rock style, which I really really like. What's your favorite memory associated with the band? Have you seen them in concert?
I've seen them many times in concert, and the first time that I saw them, they were playing at the Marquee Theater in downtown Denver, which is right next to Coors Field.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I definitely know the Marquee.
Because they have great pizza and they get good bands.
They get good bands in there. Yeah. And it's a much more intimate setting than a lot of the other venues. I mean, even the, what's the one down the street from there that's on the opposite? So the Summit feels a lot more big, a lot bigger, a lot more cavernous. And Marquee, you definitely get a little bit more of a intimate feeling with the band.
Oh, yeah. No. And yeah, the first two times that I saw them, they were headlining and still running their own merch booth.
Wow.
after the band, after they played, you could just go and talk to him. Like, yeah, back then Casey would talk to anyone about what he was planning for the Color Spectrum.
Oh, that's cool.
And
see,
yeah,
that's a great way to be intimate with the fans too, right? I mean, because they're, you know, hey, I want to buy a shirt. Oh, cool. By the way, love that song you did. What was the, you know, what's the story behind that or something like that? Yeah, I mean, it gives you a chance to interact
with red hands.
I think the same way that Trent Reznor wrote all of his albums.
Right. Awesome.
What are your favorite songs from these guys? Where would you suggest people start if you were doing kind of the show?
I would go all the way through Act Two. I think the sequence of Act Two is perfect. It shows you what you're going to get for the rest of the band.
When they play live, do they play with all the orchestral sounds that they have on the recordings, or do they go more stripped down?
That has depended slightly more on the tour. Right when Color Spectrum came out, they had, since they were doing a lot more songs from that, they had more people. But they did this tour called An Evening with the Deer Hunter, and there were something like 15 people on stage for that.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And they're not usually a large touring band, but they were for that.
Yeah, I did. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and Casey can really, like, he screams just as well there, which is why they do some pretty good Beatles covers that way.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow, I have not discovered any of their covers yet. So that's something, that I'll look forward to for the second half of the week. I really did enjoy Act Two. I think between Act Two and the Color Spectrum, there is a lot to really, really like about these guys. And just the changes that you hear in the Color Spectrum between EPs, the fact that it's, you know, from what I hear, right, they're capturing the mood of each of the colors. Is that right? And then different vocalists.
That's the plan.
Yeah. Really, really cool. Really well done. And,
in the box set that I have, there's a DVD that I've yet to settle into and watch, but I'll have that watched before we record this week.
Oh, excellent. It's got to be what, live stuff, maybe a couple of videos or something?
It's part of the making of the Color Spectrum. It's part of the Color Spectrum box, so I'm wondering if it's like a making of or a something like that. So I'll see. Mm-hmm. I'll jump into it sometime soon.
Cool.
Yeah, I haven't watched that since it came out. So I can no longer remind you.
So
what but I can. Did you guys read the or did you guys listen to the? They put out the, you know, the 9 EPs, but they also put out a Color Spectrum album. Did either of you guys see that?
No, because I assumed it was kind of an abridged version of the 9 EP set.
Yeah,
it is. But I thought it was interesting to see how you would go from those 9 EPs to 12 songs.
Sure, that is a good. Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah.
You know what I'll do is I'll do a little iTunes hocus pocus and make my own use the 9 EPs to make my own version of the my own copy of the shorter album, because there's no new content added to it, right? It's
no
12 songs from the 9 EPs. Okay, yeah, I'll totally do that, because that is a good point. You know, seeing the, you know, going from the EPs where they've got this specific flow between all the colors and within each EP, each 4 songs, it tells a different story if you just have 12 songs from that, and you kind of piece together what's going to lead into the next thing. So that'll be interesting to see.
Well, yeah, because there's some very specific instances where they don't pick the songs that they play live. Mm-hmm. Just because they think it fits the album better. And that came out a few months before all the EPs came out. So for a while, that's all that we had.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was like a sampler almost that they released.
Yeah. Hmm.
It was a palette.
Very cool.
It was a palette.
A palette cleanser.
So, nice. So what's the one thing you want people to know about this band going into the episode before Brian and I do what we do?
Oh, that they really are an amazing act live. I want everyone to go see them.
Yeah.
Because when you, I remember listening to that and saying, there's no way that he could have that kind of control over his voice live for a whole concert. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very wrong.
That's cool. Yeah, that's, I could see actually going and seeing these guys live. I was,
well, you just missed them.
I did it. Were they just here? Oh yeah. Well, they were just here at the summit. You were saying, or not the summit, the marquee. Yeah, I gotta admit, I was worried when I saw the album covers, thinking, "Oh my God, what am I getting into? These guys look very intense."
Well, they are intense.
They are intense, but they're accessibly intense
in a wonderful way. Yeah,
and, exactly.
And I was the other way around. I'm like, "Oh, cool. We're gonna get a lot of power chords and drum fills," and I got, you know, almost like what's the organ, the steam organ music almost from the first act.
Oh, like, right.
I mean, because I had that one album, and it's kind of rocking, and Act One does not rock.
No, and the first two tracks decidedly do not rock.
Yeah, so I was a little worried in the other
and
direction.
And then the third one comes in pretty fast.
Yeah,
that's funny. Oh. Well, cool. Well, this is great. This is a good setup, and I'm glad we're doing this in between. At least for me, in between, I just finished Migrant, and next for me is going to be Act 4, Act 5, Act 6, and so I'm looking forward. Huh? No Act 6. Okay.
No Act 6 yet. It's well, too big said to be contained by one rock and roll CD.
Gotcha. Okay. Well,
it's
that's
gonna
why
it's going to be a quadruple LP.
Is it?
It's going to be DVD audio, and it's going to be 3.5 hours long, and it's going to have motion video.
Oh, wow.
And
a quick time.
And yeah, and a postage stamps.
And a HyperCard thing to load on your computer, too. Well, cool.
It's going to have a full orchestral symphony in the middle, because he already wrote the music.
Wow. Well, then that'll make it a little bit easier. So I just have Migrant Act 4 and Act 5 to finish up. And so this is kind of cool that we're getting a chance to talk to you before I finish the catalog, which I always really like. Excellent. Well, this I'm excited to do this. And Peter, I got to thank you, man, for your support of the show and for...
not making us listen to Slayer.
Not making us listen to Slayer. Right. Exactly.
Well, maybe next time.
Right. Very good. Anything you want to plug? Where can people find you?
Oh, they cannot.
Oh. I'm
unfindable.
You are so deep, deep, deep underground that...
you need a tour.
Kevin asked me for a Skype name, and I had to make one.
Did you really? Well, okay. All right. What about Twitter? Like, do you want people to check you out on Twitter? Or do you have a Twitter account?
I do not have a Twitter account.
Okay, I figured, yeah.
So how do you listen to the show?
Oh, I have a podcatcher.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought maybe you stuck an antenna in the air or something.
You don't need Twitter to listen to Soundography.
I didn't know if he was a full-on Luddite or not.
No, Justin Robert Young told me to listen to you guys, and then I found out that Brian's a neighbor.
That's cool.
I didn't know Justin listened. That's nice.
That's very cool. I'll have to thank him.
Yeah.
You should collaborate on a Christian rock music
episode with him. Like do a, yeah. Is he into the whole Steve Taylor? Yeah, Striper, right? cool.
Season three, Striper.
There we go. Oh, don't make me. I'd rather pull you into listening to some Steve Taylor if we're going to do that.
Well, we could just walk down the middle and do What's Her Face with the baby and
Amy Grant. Yes, sure. That's right down the middle. She's so mainstream. She should have yellow lines painted down her back. But anyway, Peter, thank you so much for the support of the show, for turning us on to these guys, and just for being so awesome.
Oh, sure thing.
Excellent.
Enjoy your last two albums, Brian.
I absolutely will. And with that, we're going to get right into this episode of Soundography right about here. And welcome to another episode of Soundography, the final episode of season two. I can't believe it's here. I'm Brian Ibbett. With me, as always, is
Hammond Chamberlain.
Did that totally different.
But it's okay. We're changing it up and keeping it spicy.
That's right. Exactly. So this is another one of those special episodes, as you heard from the beginning, where we had a sponsor, a patron, who dictated, who absolutely insisted that we listen to a band of their recommendation. And as you also heard from the beginning with our interview with Peter, it is the Deer Hunter, the name of the band. And man, you know, you heard a lot of stuff in that intro. You heard that Hammond and I are really enjoying this.
Yeah, this was a fun week. And I have to admit, so far, minus maybe the Bay City Rollers a little bit, but even them, they were fun. Mm-hmm. Our bands that we've been told to listen to haven't been bad. I'm very happy about that.
That's very true. Yeah. Which patron made us listen to Mushroom Head again?
That wasn't a patron. That was your ever loving co-host.
I know. I'm kidding. So let's get right into it and talk about these guys. They're a progressive rock band from Providence, Rhode Island. It's a side project of a guy named Casey Crescenzo, formerly of the Receiving End of Sirens. Was his previous band. They feature a wide variety of instruments and styles. I think you heard us describing this. It seems like, you know, very modern pop punk, but with a lot more instrumentation, a lot more depth, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we talked a lot about, I talked a lot about this when we talked about Toad, which is that they always were building up but never paying off. This band has tons and tons of payoff. The songs start with like his voice and a piano, and by the end, you've got full on symphony and choir going on. There's almost a payoff at the end of almost every one of these songs.
Yeah, it's totally true. And it's, you know, for being a pop punk band, or being a band that's what progressive rock, they ladle on the hooks. It's not what I usually associate progressive rock with, which is a little bit of experimentation, some noodling, taking you on a trip with the guitar. There's definite hooks in these things.
These guys are more like progressive pop than progressive rock.
Yeah, I totally would agree with that. Continuing on with their biography, this was originally set up, this band was originally set up as a vehicle for music that didn't fit into the sound of his other band. He wanted to bottle it, to quote, bottle it up into something that I could keep with me. There was never a plan to take it on the road or release it. It was only when things with them went awry that I was given the opportunity to really make it into a traditional sort of thing. And this is him talking about when he was with the receiving end of Sirens. In 2005, Casey recorded the Dear Misleading demos. He made 10 copies that were passed around his friends and posted online. 10 copies. That is your ultimate limited release.
Yeah, that is about as underground as you can get.
Yeah, for sure. Another quote from him. The reason I originally wrote it, obviously, was because I was bitter. There are all kinds of bitter and about a guy falling in love with a prostitute and stuff. I went through something with a girl, and like most immature artist people, you write about it and complain a lot. And that is why I didn't want anyone to hear those. It's more that every character is a collection of experiences and feelings I've had about people in the past.
Yeah, I found a lot. This guy is very talkative online, and there are lots of very, very good quotes that kind of sum things up. So throughout the episode, there'll be some heavily edited quotes just to kind of keep it succinct.
Cool. Yeah, I really like that. But I like hearing the thought process behind this, and especially the thought process behind leaving the receiving end of Stars, forming his own thing. But even that middle stage of, well, I'm not sure I'm actually wanting this to be a project, more as just like an outlet. I need a valve, a pressure valve to be released on this stuff. And maybe what the intention is that it'll make it make his work with Receiving End of Sirens more focused on what that band's direction was.
Yeah, I feel like he needed a place for his prostitute-centric music to go.
Right, yeah. He started working on the very first album. And let me back up. In 2006, Casey was asked to leave, quotes, the Receiving End of Sirens. He started working on the first album and expanded the concept to a 6-album story set at the dawn of the 20th century. That is an epic undertaking.
That's what we kind of talked about before with the pompousness of Prague right there. That's you can't get more Prague-y in its structure than that.
You really can't. And you're making a hell of a commitment.
Yeah, you really are.
Yeah, I mean, it's saying you're going to come out with Listen Without Prejudice Volume 1 and you never followed up with the Volume 2, or Burn the Bee released their Songs of the Masters Hall & Oates Volume 1 and they never released a Volume 2. Here's a guy who said at the start, before he even released the first album, said, I'm going to do a 6-album series, and he's already released 5 of the 6 albums about to release the 6 at some point soon. And not only that, has released a bunch of other stuff kind of interspersed within that is kind of like, who knows, maybe the pressure valve within that.
And one of those was a pretty major undertaking.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And we'll get to that. We'll talk about that here in just a second.
So before we get on, I'd like to talk a little bit about the sound.
Yes. Okay.
So we talked about how they're kind of progressive pop, but there are a lot of prog bands that I feel like he's taken cues from. I mean, early Genesis. We mentioned Porcupine Tree and Abigail's Ghost in the intro. There's a lot of Spock's Beard, but as I was listening to it through the latter half of the week, I feel like Queen really raised its head as an influence a lot.
Totally Queen. I hear a lot of Queen, especially, it's funny, more in the act .. albums, Act 1, Act 2, more than I'd heard more Queen in that than I did in the other albums that are kind of interspersed in there. The
color spectrum almost sounds like it was influenced by like Weezer.
At some points, yeah. I mean, it's funny because those 9 EPs, and we'll go into more detail on this, but they do feel like each one has a different influence, and they do have a different intention. Migrant, again, less Queen influence than I think the Act 1, Act 2 stuff. And I think that speaks to the operatic nature that Queen has, and that influence of that operatic multi-part piece that these guys are doing, especially early Queen.
Yeah.
back when Queen's albums were Queen 1. Queen 2. Anyway, the story is about the birth, the life, the six album story arc. The story of that is about the birth, life, and death of a boy only known as the Deer Hunter and his mother, a prostitute named Ms. Terry. Crescenzo stated that the main character is not a hero at all. I don't think he does a single good thing or smart thing in any of the stories.
So he's the Homer Simpson of this world.
Kind of, right.
Kind of bumbles into things.
Dealt with a prostitute. Yeah, that's about right. Let's start with, this is great because it's going to be really hard for me not to pull an Ira Glass with this. album one came out in 2006. It's called Act One, The Lake South, The River North. That's the only time I'm going to do it. No more of those, but I just felt like it was really funny. The story starts with the birth of the main character. The album focuses on the relationship of the mother and son. Mother tried to change her life, but her selflessness soon turns back to old habits. For the story being set at the turn of the 20th century, it was an important choice for Crescenzo to make. And as the story goes on, the story points coincide with actual real life world events. It's not real or beyond fiction, but it is surreal. And he recorded it only with his brother on drums and mother, his own mother, on backing vocals. He went ahead and played all of the other instruments on the album.
I don't know if I'd be okay with singing prostitute songs with my mom.
That's right. Well, she's doing backing vocals.
And still, there's something unsettling about that concept.
A little bit. Okay, Mom, for this part, you're going to be singing The Easy. Trick Never Paid Me.
I was going to... Easy now.
Anyway, let's see. In 2007, after this album came out, he said that he had the entire story mapped out. And so he recruited members of a band which went into the studio to record the follow-up album. Alternative Press listed them in the list of 100 bands you need to know in 2007. That's huge.
So in the song 1878, I feel like there's not a lot to it, but I feel like it's very, very cool. And it lets you know right off the bat that you're going to be getting something very different from this band and from these albums.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's a hell of a setup.
It is.
and again, you know, the turn of the 20th century, it's an interesting time. I think that lends itself to a more dynamic time to tell a six-part story than if it were told today.
Or if you push it way into the future, then you'd be limited by what you think would be future sounds.
Well, yeah, exactly. In 2007, he released Act Two, The Meaning of and All Things Regarding Ms. Leading. It was released in May of that year, 2007. They'd written 2 hours of music, but they cut it down to 80 minutes to fit on one disc.
How dream theater of them, huh?
That's so very much so. The album reached number 39 on Billboard's Heat Seekers album chart. They toured in support of the album, and they made a video for the song Church and the Dime. They released a book to go along with Act Two as part of a fancy box set of Act Three and hired the artist Kent St. John to do the illustrations. There were a series of lineup changes in the band around this time, and the story of Act Two covers the death of his mother and his travels to learn more about her. And he finds love with a prostitute of his own named Ms. Leading and the eventual end of that relationship.
Oh, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
That's right. Well, you know, you stick with what you know. You want to find a girl who's just like your mother.
Yeah. So two things here. One, I have a question for you, Brian Abbott.
Okay. All right.
How many charts are there? And which ones really matter? Because there are charts popping up in this list all over the place. Heat Seekers, Mainstream, Independent, Billboard 200, Top 40. Which one matters? Right.
You know, it's funny. It depends on really who you ask. But, I mean, the Heat Seekers one seems like it's a huge honor, right? Because you're, it's not based on how much money you're making, how many albums you're selling, how many physical copies or anything like that. This is based on, this is Billboard saying, hey, we see these guys as influencers. We see these guys as bands to keep an eye on, that sort of thing. How many charts? I mean, if you look at just Billboard itself, there's like 15 or 20 because they've got each of the different different groups like Latin, country music, yeah, right, R&B, pop. And then you've got your Billboard 200 and you've got your Billboard Hot 100. I'd say those are the two that are like the industry looks at the most to see what's popular. Your Katy Perry's on there every time. Your Drake is on there. Your Lady Gaga is always on there.
And then my second question is Red Hands. Oh my gosh. So much better. They're all much better. Take off your sweater, your shoes, and your shirt, and get to work. So Red Hands basically looks like either he's looking in or he is a John, and they are singing about the act of the prostitution itself.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I need to re-listen to that one because I was hearing more. I didn't even pick up on the story until we started talking about it for the show. So going back and re-listening to this now with that story in mind.
Yeah, I'm listening to this song in the car with my kids. Like, I'm just listening. And so far, it's all been very, you know, PG, you know, and you're going along, and all of a sudden, this thing comes on, and it's like, wow, I'm skipping this one for now.
That's funny. In 2007, they released a random EP, number one, which was available only at shows. And then the next year, you know, kind of following suit, random EP number two, which was available only at shows. So you had to actually go see them in concert to get these EPs. Or you had to fork over some dough on eBay, I'm sure.
Yeah.
In 2009, they released Act Three called Life and Death. Came out in June of that year. It peaked at number 182 on the Billboard 200, number 31 on Heat Seekers, number 31 on Top Independent Albums, which marked their first chart success. I mean, making it again on the Billboard 200 is a big...
I'm just laughing because we just had the conversation about just how many how many lists are there.
It was number ocho on the Latin charts. It was number...
number 76 on the country charts.
That's right. And praise the Lord, number 94 on the gospel charts. Anyway, the story picks up that our main character is a soldier now, fighting for his life to escape his past. He faces numerous ghosts from his past. He finds his father and is saved from a mustard gas attack by who he finds out is his half-brother. And the story goes on with various tragedies from there.
This is very operatic. I feel like this is very much based in the classic opera format where our main character is nothing but befallen by bad things and everybody somehow is tied to them some other how.
Yeah, right. No, and that's absolutely, you know, there's Shakespearean elements of that, of, you know, meeting your half-brother and he being the one who saves your life and your father is a ghost that visits you. I think, I don't know, I'm thinking that that was in some big popular Shakespearean play, but I can't, just kidding.
it's about mortal coils, I don't know.
That's right, to be, not to be, I don't know. Anyway, do you think that Casey ever considers turning this into something visual as well as musical, like actually having a performance piece that goes along with this?
I think it'd be very interesting to see him do, like, I'm going to use a bad example. Oh, no, I'll use a better example. Something that ties in more like Repo, the Genetic Opera for it than like the Bee Gees, Sgt. Pepper, which is going to be my first example. But I think something more like, if they could find someone who knew how to treat the material properly, I think it could be very successful as a three-part trilogy operatic kind of film project.
And you could even do this, you know, with the emergence of easy-to-use tools for creating video these days and just how you can make something and put it up online and get as many eyes on it as you could by making it a feature film and putting in theaters, you know, having him work with fans of his music who might be talented in that area, in video creation, in, mm-hmm. you know, sets and stuff like that. I think this could be, huge. I mean, I would watch it. I would totally.
Yeah. And I thoroughly enjoyed this. This is one of the bands that we've listened to that almost the entire catalog will probably stay on my phone when we're done.
For sure. Yeah, for me too. I was surprised by that as well. In 2010, they released the Branches EP.
Putting down roots and.
Yeah, not featuring Michelle Branch.
Or Groot.
Right. They would, Deer Hunter would hold off on working on the next act and then move on to something called the Spectrum EPs. So in 2011, they released this this massive project called the Color Spectrum EPs. He announced in 2010 that he was going to be working on a concept of EPs that would focus on specific colors. And those colors are black, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, and white. Nine of them. Count them, nine. Casey's attempt to set music to colors to be inspired by what we see or what we hear in them. Before the completion of the album, there were a couple of lineup changes. Josh Rolt and Eric Cerna left the band to pursue their own musical projects. They played all of the EPs live for a three-hour set. They released it on DVD and called it, you guessed it, the Color Spectrum DVD.
So, you know what's great about listening to these is if you don't like one song, hit next and it'll be a different style. I mean, this has something for everybody.
Yeah. For sure.
This really does have something for everybody. I was so impressed with this.
So the EP, so like I said, there are nine of them and each one is four songs and they nailed the mood for each one. I mean, I haven't gone through and compared. All right, this first one, oh yeah, it's definitely black. I mean, actually, we did look at that one, saying that the first four songs definitely felt black. Going into, let's see, She's Always Singing, which would be color four, which is yellow, for sure. And I talk about this song later on, but when we were listening to this, and I said, oh yeah, you got to hear this song, and I played this song for Tina and said, this comes from a series of albums called The Color Spectrum. And each album is a four song set based on a specific color. And she said, oh, this has to be yellow. And she totally nailed it. She completely guessed
it. I see Nerdtacular game.
Oh no. What, playing these songs for, how much time do you think I have, Hammond? Maybe in the game room. Sure. But it is really cool, and it's very impressive to be able to musically capture the feeling of a color.
Yeah, and I put a couple of it in my list, and I think they totally nail it.
Yeah, and it's funny because it feels like doing this, you know, saying I'm going to take a break from the Act One, Act Two, Act Three, the overarching storyline albums, and do something that is just as freaking difficult and and epic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so thought intensive and so creatively challenging. I mean, there's no, he doesn't like, he give himself a break and say, oh, you know what? I'm going to do a covers album. I'm going to actually try to paint sound with.
Why do you assume a covers album is going to be easy
compared to doing music based on color?
Yeah. Okay. I'll give you that. But yeah, no, it's, you're absolutely right. And it's probably a situation where he's looking at this thing saying, I've got this idea for this other thing, this Color Spectrum album. And if I don't get it out now, if I wait until I'm done with all six acts of the major storyline, it's never going to happen. I'm never going to get it out.
Also, I might be colorblind by then. And it all just sounds like they white
might,
noise.
They might change the spectrum. Where will I be then?
It all just sounds like your TV after the national anthem in the 70s.
That's right. Scientists have discovered a brand new color called Blork. It's now the fourth color. Anyway. In 2013, he released the album Migrant. Entered the studio with producer Mike Watts to release this one. And this was the first album under Crescenzo's new imprint label, Cave and Canary Goods. And it is a unit of Equal Vision Records. This was another deferral in the Axe project, which Casey was aware and thoughtful about before entering the studio. Maybe this is his easy album.
Yeah.
After the Color Spectrum and after Acts 1 through 3. The first album released by the Deer Hunter that doesn't have a concept. Casey stated this presented a challenge to him as a writer to be more transparent, honest, and from the heart. There was an effort to make it a more stripped down sounding record. Do you think that in putting this together, Hammond, he initially, you know, started writing songs for this and then said, oh, wait, this song feels like it goes right into this next song storyline. I've got to break these apart, or I've got to change them up so that they're not a concept.
Oh, I'm sure when you have certain writing patterns and writing habits, they're hard to break.
Yeah.
And I wonder how he structured his work so that he wasn't writing a story again. I mean, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to change your style, change your style for sure. And also in 2013, they released a live CD version of The Color Spectrum. And then also in 2013, they released The Migrations Annex. Basically, it was an expanded version of Migrant with a bunch of bonus tracks.
And on iTunes, that's what's available. The whole thing is the expanded package. Really?
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. 2015, Back to the Story. Act 4, Rebirth and Reprise. They released A Night on the Town ahead of the album, okay, which was released as a single.
I can totally see why they picked this song, but it's kind of misleading for the listeners for the rest of the album.
Yeah, because this does feel like an individual. It does feel like a single. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, is it a bad thing to say, here's this somewhat standalone or the song that can stand alone? It is part of a much larger story. But this song kind of stands alone and somebody goes into it saying, all right, oh, I like this stuff. And then they say, oh, wow, there's this whole thing that I didn't even know existed just based on hearing this one song and coming into this.
Okay, so I will throw you Stone Sour as exhibit A.
Okay.
Their first album they did is Stone Sour, had that song Brother from this first Spider-Man film, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. Yeah. And yeah, it was a huge single for them. So people ran out and bought the Stone Sour album. Mm-hmm. And the only song that sounded like Brother on the album was Brother. The rest of it sounded more like Corey Taylor's other band, Slipknot.
Okay, good example. Gary Glitter. Most people only know one song by Gary Glitter, and it's that instrumental piece.
Yeah.
Right, it's the instrumental piece that they play after your team scores a goal. And we won't bring up his
indiscretions.
His nasty side to him. But then you're like, oh, I really like this. Let me go out and get a Gary Glitter album. And it's a whole different thing, the whole rest of it. I mean, it's glam rocky kind of different stuff. So there's history is littered with examples of bands whose one single isn't a good example. There's another one too, like a band that whose only ballad on the album turned out to be a hit and everything else on their album is like a heavy rock deal.
That happened a lot in the 80s.
Yeah, it totally did.
Like Great White was cursed with that.
Sure. So let's see. Act 4, Rebirth and Reprise. The album debuted at number 39 on the Billboard 200 and sold about 7,000 copies, which are both career highs for the band. Our protagonist takes on the identity of his half-brother, who died in Act 3, and he picks up at the end of World War I.
It's very Mad Men-y.
Kind of, right? Dickie Wilson, or what was it? Don Draper, and his real name was Dick Whitman?
I passively watched a Mad Men with my wife.
How could you passively watch Mad Men? It's either you're in or you're out.
It was on when I was falling asleep.
Oh, gotcha. Really?
Yeah. So I would catch the first half of almost every episode.
That's funny. All right. So at this point, Waves and Wait were also released as singles from this album. In 2015, the Deer Hunter Live features songs from the String Quartet tour from the mid 2013 tour that they took. Next up is Act 5, Hymns with the Devil in Confessional. This is the current album until very soon. There's supposed to be another album coming out soon. Act 5 debuted at number 48 on the Billboard 200 charts and number 6 on the Independent Albums chart. This was their second best charting success so far. They did a tour of North America, ending with a show in San Francisco by the Awesome Orchestra.
Okay, I don't know who the Awesome Orchestra is, but I'm going to find out and look into them because they sound like they're going to be
awesome.
Yeah.
They, again, it's a setup, right? I mean, it's like, if you name yourself the Awesome Orchestra, you better freaking deliver. The story of Act 5 picks up with our main character confronted by his nemesis and blackmailed. Gloria, The Revival, and Light were released as singles. Without rhymes, I won't be giving up again. Yeah, I'll be getting up again. I heard a voice, it said it to Lore Mania, Gloria. Bring me your heart and then you will. They carried out a very cool marketing campaign, sending out a postcard that was laminated, and you could play it on a record player, and it gave clues and hints to the listeners. It was cool. It reminds me of those things they used to put on cereal boxes. Like, they had cereal boxes with actual, you could cut out and play part of it on a record player.
Yeah, and I remember some magazine used to have those flexi discs. And the little flimsy plastic.
Uh-huh. Yeah, what was that? Was that, I want to say Mad Magazine had one at one time.
Oh, I'm sure everyone did it because I'm sure it was a huge kind of pull. I'm sure even like a comic book had it one in there at one point, but there was a music magazine. I want to say it was like Alternative Press or something along those lines would put a single.
Kerrang. Yeah, that's cool. It's too bad you don't see those anymore. I guess because people aren't buying magazines. And of course, it's probably a lot cheaper to just go boop, upload to a server than it is to have mass produced. You know, not vinyl, but these plastic flexi discs in there. Yeah. All right. Casey is quoted as saying that the Act 5 album is going to be the final rock record in the Act series. This may read as though I'm abandoning the project one record early, but the truth is simply that in knowing what Act 6 means to the series and what its story has to say, presenting it in the same form as Acts 1 through 5 would be short-selling the creative opportunity it presents. So basically saying that there is an Act 6 coming, but it's not going to be the same style rock stuff that we've gotten in the first 5 acts.
I'm also wondering if it's going to be a more visual project too. Maybe this answers your question.
Could be, right? You know, if you read this as short-selling the creative opportunity it presents, he could just be talking about maybe even going further into that operatic style with more of an orchestral feel to it, or it could mean something visual tied to it. It could mean a pop-up book. Who knows?
It's Lego stop motion.
That's right. Here's the pop-up book story of the man whose mother is a prostitute.
The happy ending.
Pull this tab and see what happens.
Story.
Right. Casey has already stated that the next Deer Hunter album will not be related to the act. So he's taking another break from between Act 5 and Act 6 for this next one. I think Peter at the beginning told us that it's going to be a four disc deal, the project that he's currently working on. Is that right? Do I remember?
I think so. I don't remember either. I just remember knowing that it's probably not going to be anything small that he undertakes to do this. It's going to be another major undertaking, which I guess stretches his legs before he gets into Act 6. I don't know. It's weird how this guy's mind works, but
well,
I think it's like, all right,
I've got this. I got to I got to wash the pan before I put another steak in there. Sort of thing, right? Like it's like Scott Johnson here with the analogies, but
you don't want to mix the meats really.
You cook a steak and then you cook another steak and then you cook another steak. And if you don't wash the pan before you caramelize the apples, they're going to taste like steak.
Oh, it's kind of like the Mongolian barbecue disc. If you don't scrape that thing off once in a while,
there we go. Somebody's leftover kimchi is going to be tasting up your Brussels sprouts. Exactly. Anyway, We don't really have any statistics or general notes for these guys. I mean, we talked about during the albums which ones charted and where they charted. So there's your statistics. But again, this is a tougher thing to pick for Stairway to Heaven songs, because I imagine when he performs in concert, and we've kind of seen this talked about with the live albums, they're probably playing albums almost straight through. You know, like, I think that's what you'd want to do. You're going in concert and performing these, not even counting the color spectrum. But if you're doing one of these tours that follows Act 3, for example, you're probably going to be playing Act 3 in its entirety, maybe with a Act 1 and Act 2 song to kind of help set it up.
Or you could be doing like Cliff Note concerts, where you're just hitting the highlights of the acts that you've recorded at that point. I can't believe I just came with that phrase. The Cliff Note concerts.
Cliff Note concerts. You know, that actually, more bands should do a Cliff Note concert.
Yep.
Right.
Well, like, Dream Theater actually used to do an entire medley of songs from an album, because they knew they couldn't play the entire album. So they used to do a medley.
Well, yeah.
And it still was 15 minutes long.
I believe it. Totally. All right. So I've got Setlist FM pulled up. Let's talk about this. Your pick is...
Okay, so this was really hard, since most of the albums are concept albums. I only had one prior album, so it was really hard to kind of know what to work with here. Mm-hmm. So I picked, just because I liked them, The Pimp and the Priest from Act 1, or The Church and the Dime from Act 2. Both of them because they're older, and both of them because they have some opportunity for some concert fun.
Yep, I could totally see that. You will be surprised to learn that the number one song, and it's number one by quite a bit, performed 135 times on tour, is the song from Act 3, Life and Death, called Mustard Yes. Which, I think, talk about your Queen-influenced songs. This one is super Queen-influenced.
Yeah.
So what's cool about this is Mustard Gas from Act 3 played, like I said, 135 times on tour. The second song comes from Act 2. It's The Church and the Dime.
Yes! I was close!
You were close. You were very close. Number three is Home, and that one comes from, I'm looking through,
Dream Theater's album Scenes from Memories Part 2.
Where's Home?
Wherever you hang your pants?
I guess so. This is funny because I'm not seeing, let's see here. There's not, oh, there it is. Oh, it's one of the Color Spectrum songs.
Oh.
Again, played way more than the other ones, the other Color Spectrum songs. So when they tour, it looks like Casey does kind of go across everything, at least on the tours that aren't specifically, boom, this is the Color Spectrum tour, or boom, this is the Migrant tour, you know, yeah. Like they're going all over the place. Smiling Swine is number four, tied with Weight. And, next up is He Said He Had a Story. So it is a lot of different directions they're going. Even their tour names, Act 3 Life and Death Tour, An Evening with the Deer Hunter, Beautiful Things, Good Apollo, I'm Burning Star 4. Then you've got your Migrant Tour. You've got your Color Spectrum Tour. There's even one called The Final Act Tour, which had 24 shows. When did that take place? Wow, looking at the lineup for this, it's crazy. It's like The Bittersweet, 4 and 5, The Congregation and The Sermon and the Silt, The Most Cursed of Hands, Who Am I, and Is There Anybody Here? So that's the most recent release. Hmm. But it's funny because this is in order that he's playing them, and he's hopping around. The Most Cursed of Hands, Who Am I, is track 4 on that album. Is There Anybody Here is from the previous album, is from Act Four. So
he's doing Cliff Notes.
He's doing Cliff Notes, or he's just saying, you know, this still tells the story, but in a very fractured way.
Yeah, he's doing the Chris Nolan version of it, with the time folding back on itself, non-linear storytelling.
Right, right. God, that might actually might be kind of cool to, I don't know, to take a look at one of these set lists. Here we go. Here's one from May 19th, 2017. Oh, nope. Here we go. So he does Regress, The Moon Awake, Wait, Mustard Gas, The Most Cursed of Hands, Filth and Squalor, Echo, Is There Anybody There? And then he ends with a medley of This Body merged with The Beatles' She's So Heavy is the outro.
Wow.
Which is, again, you know, you look at Beatles operatic songs with that. That's a great way to go out.
Yeah.
You could just like fade the lights out and. Very cool. Very interesting, though, like to see the set list that he plays from for his tour. Also seems, you know, nine songs feels very short, but I'm sure it's...
Yeah, these aren't long. These are not short songs.
Right, exactly. I mean,
Spock's Beard plays for an hour and a half, and they play four songs.
Right. Right. Let's see here. Yeah, it looks like the two opening tracks are the two opening tracks from Act 5, and then goes into The Most Cursed of Hands, Filth and Squalor. Yeah, very interesting, and I might actually make a playlist based on one of his set lists, just to hear how those songs flow together. I think that'd be fun. All right. Well, much like he pulls from his entire catalog to generate his set list, we're going to create playlists based on songs from all the different albums. We listen to all this stuff the entire week through, and we picked out our favorites. What's great is we don't have a greatest hits album to try and avoid.
Actually, it was really nice, actually.
Oh, it totally was, yeah. All right, I'll start. First of my tracks is from Act 3. It is Go Get Your Gun. This thing just begins right out of the gate. It is a rocker.
Yeah. Like such a great choice. Such a good song.
Yeah. Thanks. Really, really like this one. And this has got to be during his army time, right? I'm guessing from the time period that in the album that this came from. It's after the Mustard Gas. Go Get Your Gun. The next one comes from the Spectrum album. Oh, holy cow. It's funny that I didn't pick what I thought was my favorite song from the Spectrum album. I'm doubling this one up because this is a double right here. She's Always Singing and The Dead Don't Starve. I'm putting those two together. They're the first two tracks on the Yellow album. I love this combination, and I guess it does go from one into the other. I remember it bleeding into from She's Always Singing right into The Dead Don't Starve. Here, I'll fix that for you. Let me fix that for you.
I got it.
Okay. What I really liked about this is that the vocal style was different. It felt all of a sudden like, wow, okay, this is a totally – it's the band. You can definitely tell it's the same band, but it's it's totally pulling from a different direction. And it reminded me a lot of Jason Faulkner, a guitarist that I just absolutely pick up anything he releases. This is one of those bands where I don't care if I hear one song from the album before I buy the album. I'm just going to buy the album. I know I'm going to love it. third one is Sweet Naivete, Naivety from Migrant. Give me 5 seconds just to listen to what I liked about this. Oh, yeah, this is the piano piece. It's so beautiful. Such a beautiful piano piece. Right in the middle of the album, kind of like a little intermission between the first and the second halves of the album. Which are not related. It's not a story, not a concept, but it's.
But he still has an intermission. Some objects' habits are hard to break.
That's right, and it's between a bunch of rockers, so it fits perfectly. King of Swords from Act 4 is my next choice. No gloves, but you can't get enough. Make a fine parade so the public sways in your way. This is, man, if they ever had a radio-ready pop song, this is the one they just pull from. It's so energetic and just feels like it should be released as a single.
Okay, so am I wrong in thinking that there's a Talking Heads Wang Chung thing happening with this song?
Maybe. Yeah.
I may be wrong or I may be right.
You may be wrong. Well, you may be wrong and you may be right. I'm going to listen to 5 seconds of it just to refresh my... Oh, totally. Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. Very new wavy. Yeah, for sure. Listen, people, I write these lists all through the week, and sometimes I forget what the songs I pick sound like if I don't give myself some notes. Last up is one that right out of the gate feels like an Oingo Boingo-inspired song. It's called A Revival. It is from the most recent album, Act 5. And this is one of the ones they released as a single, and I can see why. Again, it feels complete. It feels self-contained. But boy, when you listen to this, it's got so many Danny Elfmanisms in it with the the backing vocals like Nightmare Before Christmas and the opening music with the horns you heard on so many of those early Oingo Boingo albums with the saxophone, the baritone sax, and the trumpets. Super, super Oingo Boingo-like. That time it was
a... Sidestepping the landmine, he says, gingerly.
That's right, exactly.
All right, for my turn, I picked, first one, I picked The Inquiry of Miss Terry. The expiry of misery. The table turns, the sun along the riverbed, and he's alone. The build-up and tempo changes are really, really interesting, and I kept finding myself thinking this was a Supertramp-sounding tune. It's very, very Supertrampy in the way it's structured, and I like it.
Totally. By the way, do you think... obviously, Ms. Leading is a very not-so-subtle... pun. Do you think Ms. Terry is supposed to be mystery?
Maybe. Wow, look at you reading into things.
Thanks.
Look at you. Wow.
That's his Ms. Leading is his
girlfriend.
His girlfriend.
And mystery is his mom.
Yeah. And who's a mystery to him. Because he has to go and find.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, go ahead.
next one, I picked The Lake and the River from Act 2. This has a really interesting melody. and it's kind of comfortably unsettling. There's something familiar about it, but because of the key it's written in, you can't really ever settle into it. It's always kind of keeps you on your heels, but it's okay because you enjoy it.
Yep.
The next one I picked is Remembered from Act 4.
Left them your necklace and brandished your ashes like stars peeking out in the gloam. Envy.
This has really amazing build and vocals. Again, the melody line is really cool. This sounds like it would be right at home in a musical, like a classic musical.
But such a good hook too. I mean, you're traveling along through the chord progression in the chorus, and then it just takes a turn and it's like, oh, that's cool. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Love that.
My next one is The March from Act 5. I picked this one because it has such a driving energy. The piano is almost a percussion instrument. Brian, am I wrong in thinking there's some ELO happening in that one?
A little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard not to, after coming off ELO a couple weeks ago, it's hard not to hear some of, maybe not influences, but hear some commonalities as you're going through.
Yeah, I've been seeing ELO in everything that I've done over the last few weeks.
I have too. Okay, so it's not just me, except for maybe the Rat Pack.
Yeah. Alrighty, number 5 is going to be Curse of Cynicism, and that's from the Red album, the Red EP from the Spectrum, Color Spectrum. And the guitar on this is just so dirty. It sounds like nothing else in the collection, and it feels like this is the one where I'm like, this sounds like something Weezer would have done, or something along some of those kind of band lines.
Mm-hmm. And do you think between these two, I'm going to ask you a quick question, because the second one is related, your second choice here. Do you think that as he was writing songs for the Color Spectrum EPs, do you think he wrote them all in order and said, all right, now I'm going to focus on Black Art. These songs are all really, really edgy and dark, blah, blah, blah. Or these songs are all happy. I'm going to put them on Yellow, or you know, I'm going to write Yellow now. Here are all these happy songs. Or do you think he came up with these songs, had them in his notebook already and said, oh, this one feels orange. I'm going to put it on the Orange album. This one feels yellow.
I have a feeling that he was writing for the color. Like he said, okay, it's Black Day, and he did black.
That's right. I'm going to eat some grape nuts. I'm going to not turn the lights on or open the shades. Let's write some black songs.
I'm going to put on my Cure cosplay, and I'm going to write black songs.
Right. All right, go. Yeah, I'm sorry. Let you get to your last choice.
And then my last choice, my bonus track, is Echo from Spectrum, and that's from the Orange EP. Now, did you find yourself leaning towards certain colors more than others?
For sure, yellow for sure was my jam when I was listening to this. Yeah. I do remember liking orange. I remember instantly figuring out that black was black without even looking at the listing of the color spectrum. But that's about it.
Drunk looking for more, pressing my tongue to my teeth, no sound.
And I had to add this one because, again, it sounds like nothing else we listened to, but I really, really, really enjoyed the sound palette that he picked for this one and the way it was mixed and it lives up to its name, and I absolutely love it.
All right, so that's it. There's our 12 songs. We gave you a lot of extra songs this week, and that's probably when you listen to these. Again, I wonder how these would sound as a straight through from one to the last one listen through, if they would fit, or if they'd be really, really jarring.
After setting the playlist up on Spotify, they all go together very well. I don't know if there's a cohesive story, but they all sound good together.
Cool. All right. Well, good. Then that totally works. Perfect. Well, here's where we usually tell you what's coming up on the next episode of Soundography. But I'm going to tell you right now, we don't know. Why? Because this is the last episode of season two, and the next thing we're going to do is sit down and work on season three, which is always such a fun aspect of doing this show. Is basically, it's almost like it's the equivalent of, we're in a big conference room, we're laying out albums all over the place and saying, well, we could do Toad the Wet Sprocket, we could do Wang Chung, we could do... and then figuring out, number one, which ones we want to do, and making sure that things are balanced, not just, all right, well, let's not do 12 episodes of new wave bands, but also
and
saying,
let's not do Styx and Rush back to back.
Yeah, learn from that mistake. But also not saying, you know, not saying, let's do three groups from the 70s all in a row, or three groups that have 18 albums all in a row. So there's a lot of work that goes into creating this. And the good news is we've got Nerdtacular coming up, so it kind of works out for us to do a lot of this stuff in person. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to figure out what's coming up for season three, and we're going to let you know that after the 1st of July. So stick around for that. We might have some bonus stuff coming to you between now and then. So don't delete your feed. Don't give fret. Up on us,
don't
baby.
Fret.
Don't fret. I like that. There's a musical term right there.
Well, I've always thought Steve Vai should call an album that.
Don't fret. Mm-hmm. Somebody should. Some guitarist should come up with an album called Don't Fret.
You'd think.
I'm amazed. Somebody has to have. I believe somebody has to. But anyway, so keep an eye on the feed. There might be some stuff coming in between now and then. In the meantime, get your ears ready for season three, which is going to start up in just a few weeks. In the meantime, and this is even more in the meantime, contact us if you'd like via email at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. @TheSoundography is how you're going to do that. Or just visit soundography.com for everything else. You'll get your downloads of previous episodes, all the good stuff you need in the show notes for every episode, including links to our playlist on Spotify, a link to where you can buy our recommended album on Amazon. I think I'm going to recommend the Color Spectrum for this one. Even though it's outside of the acts.
Maybe that CD or just the kind of the, what's it called? The
Migrant?
The sampler color one, the one that Peter talked about.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's a great one. Yes, the one where it's kind of the Cliff Notes color spectrum. Mm-hmm. Bingo. Look
the
at
palette.
That.
The palette.
The palette. Right. Of course, you can find a link to support us on Patreon, and it's a good time to jump on Patreon and be a high-level backer, because as we're setting season three, you'll have a direct influence on one of our episodes if you become a high-level backer. You'll get to tell us, just like Peter did at the beginning of this episode, who we need to listen to and cover for an episode of Soundography. So get on that. You'll find that at patreon.com/soundography. Well, Hammond, that brings us to end of season two.
A very successful season two.
I think so too. What was your, looking back, what was your favorite of the artists we covered in season two?
I enjoyed Mushroomhead and 1991.
I would give it to this one and John Auer and the Posies.
Okay.
Oh, the Ramones. The Ramones were a blast. I enjoyed the Ramones a lot more than I expected.
Especially since we had to do that one twice.
Oh, God, that's right. Oh, I needed to be sedated for that. That is going to do it for this season of Soundography. Join us next time. And until then, this is Brian Ibbett on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain saying thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
I thought you'd enjoy it.